what's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you. State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
Senator Wong, I have no idea when you sleep. I'm serious. I have no clue. Like, every time I think to myself, oh my gosh, I only got 6 hours before this shift, I'm like, but how many did Tony get?
Well, like, it's doing what you love. And what I'm able to do as a representative is a real privilege and a gift. And we have an opportunity to represent people. That is a single mission in what motivates me. So sleep is overrated, but what prompted this conversation is obviously that yesterday seemed just like just a few minutes ago, we had a public hearing in the Public Health Committee that was intended to give people's voice on a very, very emotional and controversial issue, removing religious exemption from the nearly 70-plus vaccine shots for children before they're allowed to go into school.
Right. And it seemed like there was more opponents. I mean, I know it's wrapping up this morning, and I know it's a 24-hour hearing, but it seems like there were a lot of opponents who have been weighing in on this and even threatening to leave the state.
Melissa, I think the most important part of a public hearing is transparency,
yes,
accountability, and for us as legislators to learn from people and the shareholders that are engaged. So we always talk about being accessible, being transparent. And I was really eager to learn and hear testimony yesterday in the beginning of this from all the impacted shareholders on this issue. You know, that's what we do in a representative government that is for the people, by the people. No matter where you stand on this emotional issue, unfortunately, 24 hours later, there was really only one loser in today's public hearing process: transparency and representative government. Because this 24-hour limit that was imposed before we even started, it's putting a clock on things where only about 420 people out of nearly 2,000 people on both sides of the aisle, both sides of this issue, are going to have their voices be heard.
Is it because, though, Senator, because we already kind of hammered this all out just this time last year? Is that why they put the 24-hour on, or what was the reason for it?
Well, they knew that it was going to be emotional, controversial, and I think it was kind of, you know, it's sort of like how you watch a movie, right? The movie tells you there's 2 hours and 45 minutes, and boom, there's an end to it. That seems like a predetermined kind of a process, which is not what true democracy is. And I offer the fact that if we have to stay there for 5 days, and even in the Zoom environment, you know, only 400 plus people out of nearly 2,000 people that have passionate ideas about these issues will be heard. You know, those are people's voices that are denied. And for me, ultimately, wherever you stand on this, you're going to make a decision. As a legislator, we will stand by our decision. But this process, in my mind, is disrespectful and insensitive to the people that it personally impacts.
I mean, I felt that way about the public health option with the 5-day thing. I thought and releasing it 2 weeks after legislators were able to look at it, not even the whole legislature, just some.
And that's the caution, right? Is they put on a show, in my opinion, and they say, we gave everybody an opportunity, but the real engagement and transparency of differences of ideas and opinions to be vetted is sometimes lost in translation. And I'll give you an example. February 9th was a date that was determined for a committee of the public health emergency powers that were supposed to vote to extend the governor's executive emergency powers.
Right.
The Democratic leadership didn't even bother to meet.
Yeah, I noticed that. That was so weird. They're like, yep, you could have it.
You can have it. The fact that we are going to relinquish what we do to our businesses and people's lives, I know there were arguments for and against, but the fact that you don't even meet because we don't need to bother is, again, where transparency and representative government is deeply, deeply undermined. And that is one of the challenges, we said, after the election. One-party rule from the executive branch to the majority in the House and the Senate being all Democrat and all of our constitutional offices. When one-party rule, they control the rules. Mm-hmm. They control how the game is played. And unfortunately, again, as I said about this meeting today, the only loser are the people whose lives are going to be impacted by these decisions. That is the most troubling aspect for me, Melissa, is the fact, look, you can vote one way or the other. And when we stand by our votes as a legislator, and you're going
to... But you've got to give people the opportunity to have their voices heard and at least feel like they were heard, you know, on such big matters. And one of the things we were kind of touching on is this idea of a time limit on this hearing of 24 hours, which is why it's wrapping up this morning. But something else I wanted to talk about, Senator, while I have you for a few minutes. You know, what are some of the biggest things? You said you're learning a lot listening to these virtual hearings. So what are the biggest things? Why are people against it? Because if I may just put a little point in here, I do believe that the idea of a religious exemption, and I think there's data backing this up, there have been more and more people claiming religious exemption when in fact they have proven they're not even practicing a religion. They don't belong to a certain congregation or anything like that. And this idea of religious exemption has been taken very much advantage of for the last 10 or so years. So I understand the need to maybe finite that and look at that a little bit closer. But like, what are some of the biggest reasons that people are against getting rid of the religious exemption?
Well, I think the first and foremost issue is you're going to have conflicting viewpoints. That's democracy. But being said, I do believe that there are science and data that are relevant and vaccines. I truly believe vaccines is a positive difference. I take it. Our children take it. Mm-hmm. I believe in it.
Yes.
As an individual.
I do too.
But ultimately, there are people, and that's what was the passion and the deeply held belief for people that talk about the religious exemption. They talk about the fierceness of protecting and doing anything to ensure the health and safety of their children was palpable. I had the chairman say, look, for those people that didn't testify, submit your written testimony. But the difference between something in writing versus the visceral, emotional authenticity of people talking about their religious conviction is really important, because mm-hmm. there may be people that take advantage of it and use it but there were people that truly believed deeply in their faith, deeply believed that they have a right to body decisions for themselves and for their children and their well-being.
So why not like a middle ground then, Senator? Like, so for example, let's just say I don't belong to a religion that does believe in not vaccinating children, but let's just say I did. Why not have a bill that's kind of like a middle ground? Like, so instead of just saying, yeah, no, we have a religious exemption for the people who don't fall into that category, why not require families to either get something written from their pastor or their priest or their religious leader? Like, why can't there be a middle ground to prove that, yes, in fact, this is something we strongly believe in, and here's the proof, and like, here it is from our religious leaders. It, like, has that been discussed as like maybe a possible compromise?
Melissa, that's why it's troubling to me that some of the medical experts talk about education, awareness, and that, you know, we and then there are people that said, you know, I've done my research. But to be able to get to a middle ground is where we need to.
Right.
But the fact by a state statutory decision, we're going to tell you that you need to do this or we will deny your child an educational opportunity, is where the struggle is right now. There is no middle point, and
that's
struggle.
Crazy. That's
and
crazy.
The problem is, if you had 2,000 people give you that viewpoint, and you get a sense it's not just a fractional, outlier group. Mm. You've got respected people in our community that are engaged, that believe in certain ways. I have to tell you, we are not doing right to look at compromises. That's the struggle. And we've done this for many years. Shouldn't we have a better opportunity to do better? I do. I believe it. That being said, I will share also with you this fact that we should have more of these conversations. It's deeply troubling to me that we're not giving people the voice to give us the decision-making resources to do the best by people. I'm deeply troubled and disappointed that we have left nearly 1,600 people out of the cold when they've waited 24 hours to have their voices be heard. That's not what we do in democracy. We listen to people. We are representing their viewpoints.
And I think the thing too, Senator, if you don't mind me closing, is the fact that I think, you know, I look at, like I said, to kind of bring it back around, like the public health option. My father, I think, waited, I think he said 8.5 hours to testify. And when he got off, you know, like we all said, you know, like, we're proud of you, Dad. We're proud that you said your piece. But, you know, like, there was this part of him that said, you know, if you take the facts, like the cold, hard facts that, like, you know, brokers or that other people in the healthcare industry who said, look, I don't think it's a horrible bill, but I think that we should make improvements to it. And they just ignore people who are in, like you said, upstanding people in our community who have really good basis for what they're saying. And we just ignore it. I think you're going to also turn people away from even testifying in future. Like, I really do worry that we're just going to kind of silence people. Like, listen, your testimony really doesn't matter. And I think that's also very troubling. That's a scary thing.
It is. It really is an abridgment of people's religious freedom, mm-hmm. having patient-centered choices,
yeah.
and the people's right to petition their government.
Right.
These are time-honored tradition and foundation of what this country and what Connecticut is all about as a constitution state. And I believe by this process, we are turning our backs on people. So again, regardless of where you sit on this decision, democracy and the people's belief that their voices matter lost today.
Yeah, that's really sad to hear. But I certainly will obviously see, like, with this controversy and many others that come down the pipeline. And I'll be curious to see, too, Senator, I know we've run out of time. I'll be curious to see, like, I have the governor coming on this week, and I'm going to ask him, you know, like, where do these decisions come from that we're only giving, you know, things this small window? I guarantee you, if I were to bet right now, we're going to be told it's because of COVID. And quite frankly, I'm just wondering how many things are we going to blame on the pandemic before it's like, OK, so what about when the pandemic's gone? What's the excuse then?
Melissa, there were nearly 2,000 people who stayed and was willing to testify on camera.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing related to the inconvenience. They were there. They were ready. They were denied the opportunity by a legislative decision that was inconsistent with transparency and accountability to people you were supposed to represent. For the people, by the people, and we did a disservice to that motto.
Yeah, well, I'm sad to hear that. But Senator Tony Wong, after literally being in hearings all day into the overnight and back in this morning, I appreciate you coming on this morning, and we will talk again on Monday. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity to share. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. And right now we are checking in with Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz. And Lieutenant Governor, thank you for being here this morning. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much for having me on this beautiful sunny day.
Yes, we're very excited that you're here and that you're going to be actually in Norwalk in just a few hours. So what are you doing in Norwalk today?
Well, I will be touring their new food distribution site. This replicates what Food Share has been doing in Rentschler Field in East Hartford, and that is regular mass distributions of food every week. And the need in Norwalk was so great that Food Share and Food Bank, that now have been merged together, decided to go to Norwalk every Wednesday from 9 to 12 at Calf Pasture Beach to distribute food. So this is a really good thing and will hopefully address the food insecurity in Fairfield County.
What would you say, Lieutenant Governor? I mean, pre-pandemic is obviously different than during the pandemic because so many people have lost jobs or they've fallen ill to COVID. But, you know, food insecurity, where do we sort of stand with that in Connecticut?
Prior to the pandemic, 1 in 9 people were hungry and 1 in every 6 children were hungry. So we clearly had a large problem pre-pandemic, and food insecurity is now greater because of the several hundred thousand people that have lost jobs due to the pandemic. So I have not seen Connecticut statistics since what I quoted you, since the pandemic started, but it's clear there's a need because when Food Share and Food Bank began doing these distributions with no advertising, just Facebook posts, you'd have 1,500 to 2,000 cars show up to get food. So the need is really great. And what Food Share and Food Bank were able to do, because they have just completed their merger, there were two food banks operating in Connecticut. They merged. And they have now announced there are 3 new food distribution sites that will occur every week in addition to the one that's done at Rentschler Field. And one will be in New London weekly and Norwich, both out in eastern Connecticut, and Norwalk. And they will be doing a very efficient drive-through. So all people have to do is open their trunks and drive right through.
So I'm curious, Lieutenant Governor, I mean, I know you had said that Norwalk saw a great deal of or needed this. You know, why, like in Fairfield County specifically, I actually am a little bit taken aback just because, you know, we have Bridgeport, we've got Stamford, you know, we have a number of major cities. I consider them cities, even New Haven, that's really in our listening area. You know, what sort of set Norwalk apart? Like, you know, why do we believe
why
that
did they
great...
choose Norwalk?
Yeah,
there are regular food distributions that occur in Bridgeport and New Haven. Mm-hmm. They just Food Share and Food Bank decided based on the food distributions that they were already doing where they thought the biggest need was, and part of it also has to do with where they can distribute, because this is a massive operation to be able to handle between 1,000 and 2,000 cars at every distribution. So they need, there's a lot of logistics that go into it. There's, you know, the traffic patterns. You have to have room for volunteers because there are dozens of volunteers who need to park in order to participate in this. And then, of course, for the trucks that bring in all of the food. So it really is quite the logistical feat to pull off. But I have to say that Food Share has now gotten really, really good at it. And the two of them, Food Bank and Food Share, have pooled their resources. And together they have an annual revenue of $60 million plus dollars. So it's quite a big operation.
Yeah, it sounds it. Talking to Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz this morning, and after you're in Norwalk, it sounds like, Lieutenant Governor, you're headed to Greenwich. What's going on there?
So I am going to be visiting a pizza truck owned by a wonderful Black woman entrepreneur to help celebrate Black History Month. One of the ways everybody can celebrate Black History Month is support a Black-owned business. And we heard about this pizza truck, which is just mobbed in Greenwich. It's very popular, and we're gonna check it out. We've talked to the owner via Zoom, but seeing pizza over Zoom is different than seeing it in person. So we're gonna check that out with Mayor Camillo.
Oh,
and by the way, there is a bill in the legislature that seeks to make pizza the official food for the state of Connecticut, which I think is perfect for us since so many of our pizza places like Modern and Pepe's and Sally's are in the top pizza places in the country, according to the Daily Meal.
Yes, that's been a very hot topic on our show. We've had our listeners kind of weigh in on that and debate it. And the only, you know, there are some people who feel like we should take the burger instead because we created it. There are some people
there's,
you know, and then there are some people who have family in Chicago. They've got family in New York and New Jersey. And they're like, well, they've got the best. And I'm like, oh, man, y'all. I don't know. I mean, so we'll see. We'll see
Chicago's
what ends up happening.
Chicago's a different style. I feel like the deep dish maybe is not our specialty here. We've got the thin crust.
We crush it. Yeah,
I
agree with you. And honestly, Lieutenant Governor, and I know I'm probably going to get some hate mail, but like my husband and I went to Chicago for our baby moon and a couple years ago. And I wasn't blown away by the deep dish. Like to me, I'd much rather go to Colony Pizza any day than fly into Chicago and get deep dish pizza. I don't know. It didn't do it for me. It was too much breading and I'd much rather flavor.
Yeah, and I also have to say that the Colony Grill, I know people in your area are very familiar with it, and I have to go check that out because that was the only one of the top six in the Daily Meal that I had not been to because the other ones are all in New Haven or West Haven. Zupardi's in West Haven is very much like the New Haven places, so... lots of due diligence to do. Your listeners should check out the Daily Meal and they can see where the top pizza places are in Connecticut. Pretty
yes.
cool that six of the top 100 are in our little tiny state.
Yeah, it is really cool. And if you don't mind me throwing some plans out at you, Lieutenant Governor, I'm sure you're going to be pizza out in Greenwich. But if you want to, on your way home, where it originated in Stamford, you should grab some Colony for like your ride back up to Hartford. And
What's the best in your opinion?
So what's cool about Colony is you can make your own pizza. They only have a couple that are already like they have, you know. So I always get Hot Oil pizzas. I think they're very good. I mean, if you're okay with a little bit of spice, Hot Oil pizzas from Colony, you can't go wrong. So good.
And is there cheese on that? Because the Pepe's clam pie has the white clams, the oil, the spices, and no cheese.
Yeah, no, these have cheese.
A little bit of a grater. Gotcha.
Yep. Oh, don't worry. Well, yeah, they give you all the fixings.
I'm going to have to check it out. And after, of course, I visit Dough Girl's Pizza Truck that's located on Putnam Ave in Greenwich. In case anybody's in the area, you should check that out because they have amazing margarita pizzas, I'm told. But I will let you know after I taste it in person.
Yes, I expect a full pizza review. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me. We really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor. Really, seriously, I appreciate it.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
Well, after being in the deep freeze of space for 7 months, the Perseverance rover is ready to land on the surface of Mars tomorrow. David, have you already started like a party, like our party plans for this big event?
It's one of these things that's going to be a nail biter. I don't know if I can really party. It's just going to be really nerve wracking.
Why?
I don't know. A lot is riding on what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
And like you said, yes, our Perseverance rover, which is a six-wheeled robotic vehicle packed with scientific instruments and, for the first time, a microphone to let us know what the sounds of Mars will sound like.
That is so cool.
This is going to be really cool. Yeah. Now the thing is that it has to get to the ground and it has to get placed in its landing spot in the Jezero crater on the surface of Mars. Now, Jezero crater is a really actually a dangerous spot to land And so we're really kind of nervous because we've never landed in a spot with this much varied terrain before. We'd like to try and land in a flat area and then drive over to where we need to go to do the science. But this is the first time that we're just going to go right into that dangerous area. It's kind of like trying to land in Death Valley in California, which is where they've actually done a lot of the simulations for this kind of work to try and land this vehicle. But yeah, and the crazy thing is we have to do all this stuff in 7 minutes.
In 7 minutes?
Yes.
Why does it have to land there specifically, and then why 7 minutes?
Well, two things. So one, the reason why we have to land there specifically is because the Jezero crater is actually an ancient lake bed. And we think that if we can land there, the geology of this ancient lake bed may hold either clues or evidence of ancient life on the surface of Mars.
Oh, that's
and so this rover is actually packed with a lot of different instruments designed to look for organic material. And if it finds it, it's not proof that life happened on Mars, mm-hmm. but it gets us so much closer to this idea that there might actually have been life on Mars as well. And and it's going to collect a lot of samples and actually put these samples into little containers called sample caches. And future missions, which are already being planned, will collect those samples and bring them back to Earth.
Wow. That's crazy.
But it doesn't mean anything if we can't nail the entry, descent, and landing that takes place in 7 minutes.
So do we have like a camera on this thing that we could see how if it doesn't land, let's just say, not that I'm being pessimistic, I'm just saying, if it were to happen, like, can we see what went wrong so that we could try again soon?
Well, so yes and no. So it is going to record a lot of the entry, descent, and landing. We actually have cameras that are on this system to record the deployment of the parachute. We have cameras that are going to be ground looking, so we'll be able to see different parts jettisoned and how we're going to land. So there's a lot of things that we'll be able to get information from this entry, descent, and landing. So what's going to happen, and it has to happen right, it has to happen in the right order, and it has to happen at the right time, in 7 minutes. So we're going to slam into the Martian atmosphere at about 12,000 miles per hour.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no worries.
No worries. Then we're going to have little rockets that are going to be guiding this spacecraft during this 12,000 mile per hour descent through the Martian atmosphere. But friction is going to heat up this space vehicle, so we have a heat shield. And that's going to protect us from this ball of plasma that surrounds us. That's going to be about 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And as we start to slow down to about 1,000 miles per hour, one thing that's new on this mission is a system called a range trigger. And what it is a special kind of ranging device that's going to determine when's the right time to pull the parachute cord. So before, we just pulled the parachute as soon as we thought it was okay. But now we're going to give a little more brain power to this vehicle, and it's going to decide when's the right time to pull the parachute cord. When we pull that parachute cord, the parachute's going to deploy, and this is actually going to be the largest supersonic parachute ever used on Mars.
Wow.
And it's going to slow this vehicle down. And once it gets to just the right speed, the heat shield is going to get jettisoned, and underneath is our rover waiting to land, but it's not ready yet. It's still too far off the ground, and it's going to have all these little cameras on board, and it's going to be taking pictures of the ground and comparing it to a digital map that it has stored, and it's looking for spots to land and places to avoid, like terrain to avoid. Once it gets to just the right height, all of a sudden the parachute gets jettisoned and the rover has a jetpack strapped to its back, and it's going to drop to the ground, activate the jetpack, and it's going to go down on a powered descent, and it's going to use its terrain navigation to determine where is the best spot to land and where it's the safest. And once it gets just about above the ground and ready to land, it's going to use this amazing maneuver called sky crane. And in sky crane, there's a winch with cables. And while the jetpack is suspended above the ground with its engines, it's going to lower this $250 million piece of equipment to the ground. And once the rover, with its six wheels, touches the ground, it sends a signal back up to the rockets, cut the cables. The cables are cut. The jetpack flies away, crashes, and hopefully the rover is safe on the surface of Mars.
Okay,
seven minutes
after all of that. That's literally terrible. Now I understand where your anxiety is coming from. And this is supposed to happen. It's all supposed to happen around 3:48 our time tomorrow afternoon. So my question to you, David, is because that's after our show wraps up, would you mind, good, bad, or indifferent, would you let me know what happens? And maybe on Friday morning, I guess that would be, would you mind giving us an update?
I think I could do that. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I hope I have good news.
I know, right? Fingers crossed that you have great news. And, you know, because I know a lot of our listeners who are very much into this segment have been waiting for this. I mean, it's been a while. So,
it's been a while, yes. So
fingers crossed. Hopefully we have great news tomorrow afternoon, and I will wait to hear from you.
Great. Yeah. Keep our fingers crossed.
All right. Thanks, David.